having a nice time here in Waterloo. So I'm going to talk to you about quarter BPX Wilson-Lips and N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills. And I'm going to be talking about how they provide some nice interpolating functions that go between the weak and the strong coupling regimes in ADS-CFT. So I've used the word bridges to describe them. And this is a high-level crossing in Lethbridge, Alberta. So it's a very nice train bridge. So I'm going to give a cross-section of results. I think the literature on the subject of Wilson-Lips is pretty huge. So I'm going to just give results that are useful for motivating the recent work I've been doing. I'm going to introduce a new quarter BPS circular loop that was put forward by Drucker recently. And then I'm going to discuss some recent work I've done with Gordon Semenoff on two-point functions with that loop with chiral primer. Okay, so just to remind you if you know about this stuff, or to introduce it to you if you don't, the Wilson loop in N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory with the gauge group SUN is given by this expression up here. It's a trace of a path ordered exponential of a contour integral of the gauge field. But it's also got the six scalars of the theory coupled in there. And they couple by a contour given by that theta. And that theta is a unit six vector, so that path is really a path on the five sphere. And you can understand this Wilson loop as being constructed from a sort of a Higgs mechanism. So if you take the SUN plus one theory, and you think of that as a stack of N plus one D-brains, and then you take one of them and you bring it very far away from the other end, essentially what you're doing is you're giving a bev to one element in that N plus 1 by N plus 1 matrix, for example, for the scalars here. And so these WIs here are in a fundamental representation. They're like an N row in the column of N elements. And they get that mass, big M, which is proportional to how far away you've got that D brain separated. And then the holonomy of those heavy W bosons, those heavy fundamental particles, is really measured by this Wilson loop up here, at least for the case when theta is a constant, not depending on the loop parameter. And so the process of that W boson propagating out somewhere and coming back to itself is in the path integral representation, it would be an integral over paths, weighted not only by the action, but by the Wilson loop as well. So it's in that sense that it's the holonomy. And you've also got this factor of e to the minus ml here, where l is the length of the Wilson loop outside, which is sort of like very highly suppressed.
I have a question.
Yes.
If you, what is the meaning of this velocity term, x dot?
The
absolute value.
The absolute value of the x dot. It's sort of just the, yeah, you know, if you integrated that out, it'd just be giving you the length of the loop, the spatial loop. And so the reason why it appears there, I'm not exactly sure, but if you go through it by this Higgs mechanism and actually calculate this, you will find that it pops out.
Okay, maybe it's just a measure of the radial direction for those five coordinates.
Yeah, it could be. I have to refer you to the Drucker Gross O'Grady reference.
I think the more important way of saying it is that what you're doing is coupling a superparticle to Yang-Mills. So in order to couple it consistently, that means that the work line of the particle it has kappa symmetry, then that coupling is fixed.
at strong coupling from EDS CFT, the Wilson loop is given by the semi-classical partition function for a string in EDS 5 process 5. That's written up there. And the boundary conditions for the embedding functions of the string are that at the boundary where this y coordinate is 0, the string world sheet is meeting the Wilson loop, as indicated in this picture here. Okay, so the prescription is to find a saddle point of this action. That saddle point is given by a surface of minimal area. And it turns out that that area of that surface is formally infinite because of the divergence in the area element in EDS 5. But it turns out that you can regulate that quite easily and end up with a divergent piece and a non-divergent piece, a regulated piece. And so this divergence is this factor of e to the minus ml that I showed you that occurred in the gauge theory. And so the expectation value of the Wilson loop is just given by this e to the minus root bang over 2 pi times the regulated area of the Wilson loop. And that's the way they're described at strong coupling. Okay, so I'm going to now talk about a special class of loops. And in that class, a representative is just a straight line. The straight line is just, well, a straight line in the four directions. And then this theta parameter is constant, so it's sitting at a point on the phi screen. And if you just start naively looking at the perturbation theory of the Wilson loop, one thing that strikes you is that the combined propagator between the gauge field and the scalars is just identically zero. So the propagator that starts on the line and ends on the line is just zero. So this is actually a special case of a class of so-called supersymmetric Wilson loops that Zaremba introduced. And they generally have this form for their contour on the phi square. They don't have to sit at a point on the phi square. They simply have to have this relation. But if you put in a straight line in there, you'll find that theta is constant. For these loops, this loop-to-loop propagator always vanishes. And so one would think that they're protected by supersymmetry, and they are. So if you look at that supersymmetry variation of a Wilson loop, you find that that amounts to inserting this object up here, x dot mu gamma mu, et cetera, into the trace here. And so if there's some solutions to this, we'll have some supersymmetry. The operator is actually nilpotent. It squares to zero. And typically that means that you will be halving the supersymmetry. But here, it's only local supersymmetry in general because of the dependence upon this x dot mu, this loop. So local symmetry is not a symmetry of n equals 4. But if you take the supersymmetric Wilson loops, you find that that loop dependence just factorizes, as I've written here. And so you get one halving condition for each sort of degree of freedom in the loop, or dimensionality of the loop. And so, in general, a d-dimensional loop will have 1 over 2 to the d BPSness. So the straight line is a one-dimensional object, it's half BPS. A circle or any sort of contour in the plane would be two-dimensional, that would be quarter BPS, etc. And the worst you can do is have four independent functions, which would give you a 60 BPS object. So the protection, well, the protection has been formally proved for the half, quarter, and eighth case by Gralnick and Kulik. And they used the fact that they could package the relevant gauge fields and scalars into a chiral superfield of an n equals 2 subalgebra. And then that the Wilson loop was a member of the chiral main. And they were able to use the superalgebra to show that these things are protected and that their expectation value is identical to one. You know, Zaremba actually showed it with the explicit gauge theory computation up to just a couple of orders, but this result is good for all orders. The 16th BDS loop protection is, as far as I understand, remains conjectured as far as gauge theory is concerned.
Hasn't this recent work of Kapustin and Witten solved that? Because they show that these BPS operators are in the heuristic homology of some tweets.
Okay.
And in fact, they're heuristic trivial. So
okay.
The expectation value is from the trivial.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar. Okay, from ADS-CFT, the protection has also been shown. And I'm just going to introduce it gently with a simple example here. So I'm going to take the straight line. And for the straight line, you expect the regulated area to be 0, since the expectation value of Wilson loop is supposed to be 1. So the area of the string Wolchi in general would be given by this expression up here, where dots are derivative by sigma, or by tau, and primes derivative by sigma. We can set x 1, 2, 3 to 0, or if we do that, if we set x 1, 2, 3 to 0, we just have two embedding functions to worry about, but that's just how much gauge invariance we have with the string theory. And you can just take x 0 being sigma, y being tau, and that solves the equations of motion in respect to the boundary condition. And then if you calculate the area, you just find that you get exactly the divergent piece, and so there's no regulated area. And so you see that the expectation value for Wilson is 1 in this case. To be completely general, you can do more. So just to say first, that Zaremba found a minimal surface for the quarter BPS supersymmetric circle, and he found that the regulated area there was 0. And in fact, the ADS-5 contribution to the area is always negative. And that just seems to be a fact because you're removing this infinite divergence and what's left is negative. On the S-5, the contribution to the area is always positive, of course. There's no divergence there. And so you can see that there's a cancellation between the areas of the world sheets and the two spaces. These authors here underlined, they actually were able to prove that the regulated area is 0 for all of the supersymmetric loops using a calibration. And they decomposed the ADS-5 cross S-5 method like this. And then they were able to show that there was a calibration, this J, which is an almost complex structure obeying some relations. And they found that that inequality was saturated by a minimal surface. And that the value of the integral over J there is just exactly that divergent piece. And so they were able to show full protection from the ADS-CFT perspective. But now I want to talk about another Wilson loop, which is not a supersymmetric Wilson loop. It's called the half BPS circle. And I call it the straight lines conformal half brother. And you'll see why I call it a half brother in a second. So the expectation value of the straight line here on the left is just 1, like I've shown you. But when you do a conformal transformation, an inversion, you get a circle. But the Wilson loop expectation value is not enough equal to 1 on that side. It actually ends up depending on the Tuft couple. And on the left, the straight line's half BPS, because if you look at the supersymmetry, the Poincaré and the superconformal supersymmetries, which I'm calling epsilon 0 and epsilon 1 here, they each have an independent condition. But actually, the half BPS circle has one condition relating them. So it's half BPS, but it's a mixture of superconformal and Poincaré supersymmetry. So it's quite a different object. One would think that in a conformal field theory, you wouldn't be able to cause such violence by simply doing a conformal transformation, but it turns out to be a singular one. Erickson, Zamenhof, and Zarembo were able to go quite far with this circle. They showed that the loop-to-loop propagator, first of all, is a constant. Okay, and for the supersymmetric Wilson loops, it was zero, while here it's a constant. So summing, if you wanted to sum, say, the planar ladder diagrams, it's just a counting exercise. And you can do that counting as follows. So here I have a five-propagator planar ladder diagram. And so this horizontal line on the bottom, its end should be identified. It represents the circular Wilson loop. And I can decompose that. So when I draw that one five-propagator graph, I really mean by it all five-propagator graphs. And I can decompose that as all four-propagator graphs with one extra arc that's indicated in red there, plus all three-propagator graphs with a propagator inside that arc, plus all two-propagator graphs with two propagators inside that arc, and et cetera. And so you can actually decompose an n plus 1 propagator planar ladder diagram like that as the sum of n minus k with this single red arc. And so that gives you a recursion relation for the number of such diagrams. And that recursion relation can be solved. And once you've solved that, you can evaluate the expectation value for all of the planar ladder diagrams. And you can sum it, and it gives you this modified Bessel function with the root of the Tokikoff ring as the argument. So this is one of these bridges I'm talking about, because I'll show you in a second that it seems very probable that the ladders give the whole description and that other diagrams are important. And so we've got a function that gives information at arbitrary Tokikoff. So this is sort of a bridge from weak to strong coupling. Okay, Drucker and Gross took this story further. So the diagrams that have one internal vertex in them, so diagrams like this, and all the other ones with one internal vertex, they were shown to cancel by Erickson, Zamenhof, and Zarembo. They also notice that this counting of planar ladder diagrams can be done by a one matrix model, one Hermitian matrix model that I've written up here. It does the same job for you. So Drucker and Gross went further, and they solved that model for not only arbitrary lambda, but arbitrary n as well. And they were able to get a closed form, so for any n and for any lambda, which of course gives the Bessel function I showed you at leading order in one over n, and then gives a bunch of corrections. And they also understood how this conformal transformation makes the line so different from the circle. And the reason why is it's a sort of a singular conformal transformation, so that on the line, all of these kinds of diagrams are just zero, because the propagator is zero. But when you do the conformal transformation, these points of infinity get mapped in here. And the propagator becomes singular in this way, that when you integrate over this point, it sets it to here with a delta function. And then it also sets the other one to here as well. And so the entire dynamics is captured at a single point. And that's why you see a zero-dimensional theory able to give you the answer, a zero-dimensional matrix model like that able to give you the answer, because the whole thing is happening at this point. And in fact, they said that the result would be completely general. If you took any open Wilson loop, well, then its expectation value would be related to the expectation value of the one you get, of the closed loop you get by this inversion. By this exact same function, this f lambda n is this function up here. This L is a Laguerre polynomial. So they were able to tie together things quite nicely and sort of complete the story there.
So this is an exact result?
It's an exact result.
Were you able to show that it is also true when you include other diagrams than only the rainbow? and data diagrams, say, we're able to show it?
No, no. The status on that is not as good. So,
okay.
Like the internal, like these diagrams with one internal vertex, they were shown. I believe there's been some work that goes a little bit further.
Well, I have a more specific question. So,
okay.
Just for that simple relation, do they need only that?
No, okay, no. No, no, this relation is supposed to be good in general.
It's supposed to be, you mean,
I mean, they argued in such a way that because all the dynamics is happening at this point, right, so if you have, you know, some crazy diagram going on in here, well, that's the same diagram that you have for the conformally inverted curve, and you know by supersymmetry that this is just that all of these contributions just get something simple. But the point is that whatever they do, if you do this conformal inversion, you're just going to get that same stuff plus the matrix model here. So it should be good for any old loop.
It is surprising that the result does not depend on the area, is it? Or
I don't think so because of the conformal nature of the theory. There should be a scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so the circle, this half BPS circle that I've been talking about, from the point of view of ADS CFT, from the point of view of the string theory side of the correspondence, the minimal surface has been found, and the regulated area is minus 2 pi. And that gives you that the expectation value of the Wilson loop is e to the root of the Tuft vector. And if I take the large lambda and large m limit for the gauge theory result that I showed you to compare it, I get this, which is almost the same, except I've got this lambda 3 quarters and this root 2 over pi. So in fact, the discrepancy, at least with the lambda to the 3 quarters, is resolved because when you do the path integral for the partition function of this string, it's a disk amplitude, there's three constraints. And each one contributes a factor of lambda to the minus a quarter to the path integral. And so that counting is consistent with the string theory. And in fact, Drucker and Gross went further and said that you could decorate that disk with zero area handles to generate handles. And you can do the counting of the powers of lambda. And you get some expression like this. And in fact, when they did their large lambda but not large n expansion of their complete matrix model result, which I showed you, they actually found that this CP is given by something like this. And so there's a connection here, a matching between string theory and gauge theory, but it's not, on the string theory side, it's not precise enough to know those coefficients. But the counting of the lambda is precise enough to know that. Okay, so the quarter BPS circles. So these were recently introduced by Drucker. They describe a circle in the regular space. And then the contour on the phi sphere is also a circle. It's indicated in this figure I've drawn. And we have a free parameter called theta naught. And when theta naught's pi over 2, you get the quarter BPS supersymmetric circle of Zaremba. And when theta naught's 0, the contour on the phi sphere shrinks down to a point, and you just get the half BPS circle that I was just talking about. For general theta naught, there's one condition on each of the Poincaré and superconformal supersymmetry spinners. And then there's one more relating them. So it's a sort of a mixture between a supersymmetric Wilson loop where those things are independent and the half BPS circle where there's just one relation relating them. So it has both of these things going on, and that gives you a quarter of the supersymmetry. Drucker noticed that the loop-to-loop propagator here, like in the case of the half BPS circle, is just a constant again. but it's a constant which is multiplied by a cos squared of Fedunov compared to the Alfred-Josef. And so he went further and he showed that the leading internal vertex diagrams that I was talking about, which cancel for the Alfred-Josef rule, well, they cancel here too by the very same mechanism. And the only difference in all this is that the coupling is replaced by this coupling times cos squared Fedunov. And so he found that, though, that the gauge theory result should just be the half BPS result with lambda replaced by lambda prime. And he did the string calculation and found the minimal surface. And there he found that the expectation of the whole loop was the exponential of root lambda prime in the large lambda, large n limit. And so it almost looks like this corner BPS circle is just very, very similar to the half BPS.
Is this an exact result?
So on the gauge theory side, it's exact in the sense that you don't really know if the internal vertex diagrams are really canceling. So it's as exact as the half BPS circle.
And
from the gravity side, it's, you know, there's no, for the large lambda, large n limit, there's no place for anything to go wrong. Once you find the minimal surface, then you evaluate its area, and that's it. And so that's what you do.
Is there a corresponding matrix model?
Well, it should be exactly the same with lambda replaced by lambda prime. That's what he conjectured. Because the whole reason why the matrix model, you know, the whole reason why the matrix model works in a sense is because the propagators are constant. And so there's no sort of spatial dynamics, it's just a counting of graphs.
So what happens if you do perturbation theory in this and compute?
Well, exactly the same thing that happens to the half BPS circle happens. The ladders are just a counting exercise because the propagators are constant. And the leading internal vertex diagrams cancel by the exact same mechanism they did for half BPS. Okay, so I'd like to talk about this work I've recently done. So we took this quarter BPS loop of Drucker. And we went about finding the two-point function of it with chiral primary operators. So in particular, we calculated the long distance limit of this object, where the chiral primary is far away from the Wilson. So just as an introduction to that, if you look at a Wilson loop from large distances, it should sort of look like a collection of local operators. Just what I've drawn here. So then the leading behavior of a correlator, so actually I should just say, I say plus dot dot dot, so there's other things in there. So what I've written here are chiral primaries. They're the ones with the lowest conformal dimension. And then there's a bunch of other operators. They're descendants and operators built out of gauge fields and fermions and et cetera. But in the limit of very large distances, one sees the operators of smallest conformal dimension, and those are the chiral primaries. And so I could take a two-point function with a chiral primary in the Wilson loop, and if I normalize my chiral primaries like this, well, then I should find that this two-point function is given by something like so, where all the information is contained in this Xi delta. And so we'll be interested in calculating the Xi delta. Okay, this whole story's been done for the half BPS circle, so I'll just show you what it's like there. In the half BPS circle, if we take the point on the 5-sphere to be just 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, well then I can write out the Wilson loop like this, where this z is just phi 1 plus I phi 2, and the chiral primary I'm talking about is just trace z to the j. then the two-point function is just going to give me an answer for cj, which is like this, 1 over n, 1 over 2 to the j, 1 over j factorial, and then a square root of j lambda to the j. In fact, all the planar diagrams for that calculation were done in Gauge theory by Semenov and Zaremko. And so these are diagrams that look like this. Ladders, here's the chiral primary, so something like that. So they were able to sum the ladders because the propagator is constant. And so sort of for the same reason they were able to just with the circle. And they were able to get a closed form for this CJ, where now you have a J-order modified Bessel function in there. And that result for the large lambda, large n limit was confirmed at ADSC of peak. And I'll tell you that more about that in slides that follow. So for our calculation, it's useful to look at the supersymmetry before we begin. So we can compare the supersymmetry between our quarter BPS loop and a general chiral primary, which I can build by taking a complex six vector and dotting it with the six fives, the six scalars, such that u squared is zero. And that gives me supersymmetry conditions where I don't have any supersymmetry conditions on the superconformal plane because the operator's at a point. And I have this one condition on the Poincaré supersymmetry. For the quarter BPS loop, the box above there, it's more complicated, but like I said, you have two independent conditions on epsilon 0 and epsilon 1, and then one condition relating. So for a half BPS circle, theta naught would be 0, and that would take away the top two conditions, and you'd just be left with the bottom one there. And that's what we saw before. There's one condition relating in the half BPS case. The chiral primary operator condition will further have that, so that the chiral primary half BPS Wilson loop respects a quarter of the supersymmetry. And the respect of that supersymmetry is, we can think, is what's responsible for the protection of the quantity, the ability to just sum ladder diagrams and have that be correct. So for us, for general theta naught, not equal to 0 or anything else, we find that there's some shared supersymmetry for three specific cases. So if I write this u vector that I am building my chiral primary with, then if I set the first two components to 0, I can always rotate the fifth and sixth component to 0 because that rotation would commute with the Wilson loop. And then we find that the only solution is if u3 equals plus or minus I in 4. And then we have an eighth shared supersymmetry. Same thing, we could set u3, u4 to 0 and have u1 equal plus or minus I u2, same situation. And then the most general thing we can do is have both of these conditions at the same time. And that turns out to be 16 supersymmetries that are common in that case. And so the least supersymmetric choice we can take is a chiral primary built like this. Anything more general, we don't really expect to be protected from radiative corrections in Gauge theory. In fact, the R symmetry in our case pares down the choice of CPO even further. So all terms that have all factors of phi 1 plus I phi 2 in the two-point function are actually going to vanish by R symmetry. So this is because if I do a spatial rotation in the plane of the circle, I can undo that by just shifting the loop parameter. But then I've screwed up the phi sphere directions. But then I can undo those with an R symmetry rotation. And if I work those symmetries out, I can show that the two-point function is equal to itself times a number for a chiral primary built on phi 1 plus I phi 2. And so that means that we can not lose any generality, but just taking a straightforward 5-3 plus 5-5-4 kind of thing. So that's what we've done. So the gauge theory computation proceeds like this. We want to evaluate this object. So leading order, we just have the chiral primary indicated by x here on the left. We have j scalar lines going over to the Wilson loop on the right. If you recall, the contour in this loop, the theta 3 is just a constant, just cos theta naught, and theta 4 is 0. So the j scalar lines here are simply going to provide j powers of cos theta naught, because the only thing that could happen is for the 5-3 in the chiral primary to couple to the 5-3 in the Wilson loop. And that just gives you the proper power counting to give you exactly this lambda goes to lambda prime result. So lambda is just replaced by cos squared theta naught lambda in the half BPS result. The next most complicated thing would be to do ladders. Well, like I said, the loop-to-loop propagator is constant here, like it was for the half BPS. And so the half BPS result can just come over with that modified couple. And so I can just say that Cj for all of them is just the one for the half BPS there with this scaled couple. I guess the further nice surprise was, beyond the fact that the leading and turning vertex diagrams cancel, like I've told you, the leading radiative corrections that are shown by these four diagrams here, they cancel for the half BPS circle. Well, in fact, they cancel for our circle as well. So our conjecture is that the higher order analogs vanish as well, since, as you'll see, the ADS-CFT computation gives us a large lambda limit of the Bessel function. So how does one do this computation in string theory? Well, the chiral primaries are dual to some gravitons propagating in ADS5 across S5. And the large distance correlator can be thought of as an exchange of these modes between the boundary and the world sheet of the Wilson loop. But the easier way to do it is to extract these CJs from a correlator of two well-separated Wilson loops. And Bernstein, Corrado, Fischler, and Avicenna showed that you could actually get these CJs out from such a correlator. So the bulk-to-bulk exchange between two widely separated Wilson loops is really just dominated by their chiral primaries. Okay, the minimal surface for the quarter BPS loop was given by Drucker in his paper. And I'm going to give it here in these coordinates. So ADS5 here is coordinatized by a couple of plane polar coordinates. And then I've got a sort of traditional five-sphere metric. And the world sheet's embedded like this. So sigma, when sigma's 0, we're at the boundary. The world sheet on the five-sphere world sheet on the 5-sphere is doing this. So it's wrapping an S2 up to an angle theta naught like that. In fact, what Drucker found was that there was two saddle points in his action when he was trying to find the minimal surface. And the other one corresponded to, instead, if I put the equator here, let's say, instead wrapping the other way, which is obviously a larger area and solution. And that's why it's not the minimal saddle point, but it is a saddle point nonetheless. And so these two solutions correspond to this plus and minus in the embedding function for theta. And the plus, the top sign, is for the minimal one. And the other saddle point is with the minus. And I'm going to keep them both because it turns out to be interesting. I should just say, so when you calculate the regulated area, for the minimal one, you end up finding that the Wilson loop is like e to the root lambda prime. And for this one, it's like e to the minus root lambda prime. So the relevant supergravity modes are pretty well known. They correspond to some lightest scalars in supergravity fluctuations on ADS5 plus S5. I've got alpha beta being coordinates on ADS5, and these capital IK being coordinates on S5. The big X is denoting the coordinates on ADS5, and the omega on the S5. And so we have to pick our spherical harmonic to correspond to the chiral primary we're interested in. And that correspondence is given as follows. You build your spherical harmonic by taking a dot product of this U with the embedding functions of the sphere. So for our embedding, a lot of those embedding functions are just zero, except for three of them. And so our most general spherical harmonic will be given by this. And J is some normalization that I'm not interested in. So I calculate this exchange between these two widely separated Wilson loops as follows. I've got the variations of the metric coupling to the two world sheets. And then I've got a propagator, the propagator of this lightest scalar field, the bulk-to-bulk propagator, connected to. And in the middle of a very large separation, I can just give that as y to the j, y bar to the j over x to the 2j, where x is the separation between the Wilson loops. So what we find when we plug our embedded functions for this quarter BPS loop into this and turn the crank, well, we get some structure that looks like this. And the first thing to notice is that there's an integral over the spherical harmonic, because the world sheet coordinate tau only appears there. It doesn't appear in the main part of the action. And so we have an integral over tau of this spherical harmonic. So if we take u1 equals to plus or minus iu2, that's our minimal supersymmetric 16th BPS choice. And what we find is that the dependence on u1 and u2 is gone. It gets integrated to zero. And we just get the result as if we had set the u1 and u2 to zero before we integrated. So we're going to take that result and plug it back in up there and turn the crank. And so this is what we find for our results. There's a rather complicated integral with lots of powers of cos theta not hanging around, but it turns out to just give something that's linear to cos theta not. And so that was a bit of a surprise. And you can see the sign structure there that I said that I was going to keep along for these two saddle points, which will be important for the next slide. But the result we found boxed here is we found this CJ, and this turned out to be exactly the large lambda limit of this jth Bessel function expression that I showed you. And it's also the half BPS circle result with lambda rescaled by cos squared theta. Now, if I had chosen u1 not equal to plus or minus iu2, I wouldn't have, the integral of the spherical harmonic wouldn't have been so simple. And in that case, for example, for j equals 2, you get something like this, which is very complicated dependence on cos theta naught. And when cos theta naught is 0 or 1, that expression happens to be 0, which makes sense because in a half BPS loop case, you don't have any restriction on the chiral primary you take. Any one you take is quarter BPS. But here, it's not the same. So if you don't take u1 equals plus or minus iu2, there's an indication of strong coupling that there's a lack of protection. Okay, this whole story with the double saddle points. Well, when you calculate the expectation value of a Wilson loop, and you've got these two saddle points, you expect to have two terms, one proportional to one saddle point and one proportional to the other. if you take the large lambda expansion of the gauge theory result, which is a modified Bessel function, well, the asymptotic expansion of that Bessel function looks like this. And indeed, that's exactly what you see. One term proportional to e to the square root lambda, one term proportional to e to the minus square root lambda. And there's an I. And actually, Drucker associated that I with the fluctuation determinant of tachyonic modes. Because if you choose this unstable world sheet, well, it's going to want to slip off and become this stable minimal area world sheet. So for us, the sign structure that we found indicates that we expect a term proportional to e to the root lambda prime, and another one proportional to minus 1 to the j plus 1, e to the minus root lambda prime, for this xcj quantity. And in fact, if you do the same business for the Bessel function result for xcj, you also see exactly that same structure as you expected. And so somehow here, the gauge theory captures the two saddle points of the string theory result. Now, I think that this whole story is a little bit speculative because, in fact, for the half VPS circle, you just have one saddle point, and yet you get also these expressions just with lambda prime replaced by lambda. So it's not really very clear what's going on here yet. I don't think it's been very well understood. But it's sort of interesting just to mention. So finally, I'd like to give some perspectives. I didn't talk at all about a really beautiful picture that's emerged about giant Wilson loops. And these are Wilson loops with very large representations. The trace is not a fundamental representation, but it's a general representation that's big compared to n. And in fact, Jome and Filippo Pasolini have done some very important work on that subject here. These guys correspond to D-brains that are expanding either into ADS5 or S5, very much like the giant graviton picture. I think it would be really interesting if we could find a D-brain description of the loop presented here. And we could then repeat this calculation and maybe two-point functions with other objects, such as giant gravitons or other giant loops as well. And that's it. Thank you.